alt-right bannerman Blair Cottrell's appearance on Sky News has caused an outrage from within the media and the public spheres. This, along with Andrew Bolt's Us and Them article in the Herald Sun last week, has led to a discussion about the media's role in giving hate a platform on which to speak. These examples have highlighted a conundrum that the media faces in both wanting to encourage free speech versus the harm people can cause with their words. Now, to find out more, we're joined by the University of Melbourne's Dennis Muller. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Casey.
Now, Blair Cottrell is known for his hard right-wing views. So was it wrong for Sky News to give him airtime?
Yes, of course it was, because his stock in trade is hate speech and racism. He's a Hitler fan. We know all these things. So he's perfectly entitled to stand on a soapbox in the corner of some park somewhere, or carry banners around in the street, or write letters, or do whatever he likes to express these views. But the media aren't obliged to give him a platform, because that just amplifies, gives him a megaphone. And there's no obligation on any media organisation to do that, because he has other means of expressing himself. No one's going to put him in jail for it, but it's just irresponsible on the part of the media, because it sows division in the community. It stigmatizes and marginalizes groups, and that's, of course, socially irresponsible.
So why did Sky do it then?
Well, you have to ask them, I suppose, but I think that the outgoing Racial Discrimination Commissioner Tim Soutphommasane put his finger on it when he talked about the monetization of racism, by which he meant using racism as a way to attract audiences and therefore increase your ratings and make yourself a more attractive proposition to advertisers. I think that he put his finger on it. Sky has tiny audiences. And it needs all the marketing it can get. And, of course, this is why it's a problem for people like you and me, because just by talking about them, we give them more publicity and more profile. So it's a dilemma for us, isn't it?
Well, so that really does touch on the big problem here, which is that the media is supposed to inform and provide public interest, but also it has its own marketplace problems. People need to actually be watching it, and they need to somewhat be entertained, and this kind of drama does that. So how do we toe the line between making sure that the marketplace is happy, making sure that viewers are still there, and not spreading the kind of vitriol that some of these people do?
Well, of course, there are lots of good stories, lots of interesting stories, dramatic stories to be told, apart from racism. But when you have a public company like Sky misbehaving like this, then that itself is a matter of public interest. So we need to report it. And I think the only way we can report it is to get alternative perspectives on it. So you might talk to, for example, the Sudanese community in Melbourne, which is the target of a lot of this sort of stuff. You might talk to the Ethnic Communities Council. You have to report it, but you can report it in a way that gives alternative perspectives. And if you're commenting on it, then you can frame your comment in a very negative and disapproving way. That's about all you can do, but you just can't ignore these things. It's a question of not of whether you do it, but how you do it, I think.
Now, Andrew Bolt, on the other hand, I mean, he's not just a one-off kind of flash in the pan kind of thing like Blair Cottrell, who Sky then gets censured for and hopefully won't put on again. He's kind of a, within certain circles, respected journalist and social and political commentator. But his Us and Them article has been heavily criticised. I mean, is there occasions when people who are respected by some parts of the community take that step too far and need to be pulled back into line?
Oh, well, Bolt, again, a bit like Sky, he's made a brand out of himself. He has created this persona of the sensible conservative man. And that is basically a branding exercise. And so when he talks about there being no us anymore and how we're being overrun by a tidal wave of colonies, and he singles out the Jews, for heaven's sake, who've been here for God knows how long, among others, what he's doing is in a sense reinforcing his brand. I suppose he believes it, but I don't know that. However, he has been out there doing this sort of thing for years. He was successfully sued by a group of Aboriginal people in 2011 for being racist in respect of them. So, just like Cottrell, in many respects, it's his stock in trade, but he has this permanent place in the Herald Sun, and he's syndicated elsewhere, of course. And so he is a marketable commodity both for himself and for the newspapers who run him. So once again, I think it's an example of monetizing racism.
We're speaking with the University of Melbourne's Dennis Muller about the role the media's free speech directive takes versus the harm it can cause. Now, you spoke then about a case in 2011 where Bolt was taken to court. He's had a few occasions where he's been to court. People are still watching him. Is it just a matter of turning it off, not talking about these people, ignoring it, and then expecting that if they're not getting any viewers and any listeners, they will go away?
I don't think that's likely to happen. I think, if anything, they would amp it up. What I'm seeing here, I think, is a trend towards importing into Sky News a lot of the more divisive material from Fox News in the United States. And I did an analysis of Sky News and Fox News last year. What I saw there was Sky News during the daytime, being actually quite a sensible news channel, did quite a good news service. But at about 6 o'clock, they turned from Dr. Jekyll to Mr. Hyde. And you have a whole lot of poisonous sort of stuff of the kind that runs on Fox News all the time. Now, Fox News has been tremendously commercially successful in America, owned by Rupert Murdoch, of course, also very politically influential. And so my guess is that what they would be doing is sort of doubling down on this stuff. So I think there's no hope just by ignoring them that it will go away. I think what's required is that our broadcast regulators look at this material and adopt a fit and proper person test for licensing television channels, which is what we used to have and don't have anymore. And if we had such a test, then I think we might have some hope of imposing some decent standards.
So, I mean, the ACMA is a bit of a toothless tiger at times. Well, what's the fit and proper person's test?
Well, originally, when television licenses were introduced in Australia, people who applied to hold a license had to pass a fit and proper person's test. That is to say, they had to be regarded by the government as basically a responsible citizen. And the people who got the licenses at first, of course, were the big newspaper companies. So the Fairfaxes and the Packers and the Herald and Weekly Times Company in Melbourne. And they of course, passed the test easily because their papers were, broadly speaking, pretty responsible. That was taken away in the 1980s, I think, from memory, or might be in the 1990s, with various changes to the Broadcasting Services Act, and that test was removed. And so now there's no way of holding people like Sky, organisations like Sky, to account, and basically by threatening their future licence holding. Now, short of that, I don't think Sky is likely to do anything other than pursue the same sort of strategies that have been so successful for Fox News in America.
Well, look, that fit and proper person's test sounds like a good idea to me, Dennis. And in the meantime, we'll just have to keep talking about these issues and try and make some change. It was a pleasure speaking with you this morning. Thanks for joining us on Breakfast.
That's a pleasure, Casey.
That was Dennis Muller from the University of Melbourne speaking with me about how the media can deal responsibly with free speech.